Attention. At this moment, you are now listening to
a Radio 1 show.
This is a vicious expose of a part of the young generation, that sick generation who must ravage and plunder for their kicks. Scenes of such brutal honesty that we strongly recommend that impressionable young people, or those people of any age, who are upset or affected by arm twisting, now close their eyes. Thank you.
Fist of Fun.
Coming to you from Queen's University in Belfast!
Thanks a lot. I'm Stuart Lee.
And my given name is Richard Herring.
That's right. Welcome, people of Belfast and 1FM listeners, to Fist of Fun.
Fist of Fun.
This week with added arm twisting, as you heard at the start there, so look out for that.
See if you can spot it.
Now, Fist of Fun is quite literally a rag bag of half-thought-out ideas written in the small hours of last night by two uninformed men who live in South London and rarely venture out of their homes for fear of missing an episode of Going for Gold.
Actually, my mum was very scared about me coming to Belfast. You know what mothers are like, you know.
Yeah,
hello, mum. Everything's okay so far.
That, Richard, is of course, you live in Cheddar in Somerset, isn't it? And it must be very frightening coming all the way across the sea in the belly of a giant iron bird there. Wasn't so long ago that you and your kind thought that you'd fall off the edge of the world if you went past Bristol,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. Very funny, Stu, as usual. Actually, my friend Brian Bancroft travelled as far as Swindon as early as the mid-1980s. He became the first person to travel beyond the Axbridge Bypass and return to tell tales of the new land he'd visited.
Yeah, Swindon. How the coloured lights and the use of language and words to communicate rather than grunts and things must have confused him. He returned with a battery-operated torch and became the mayor of Somerset, didn't he?
You know very well he only became the king of Wells, Stuart.
Fist of Fun. Fist.
And, you know, although having a poor start in life coming from Somerset, you know, I've learned that I can get somewhere, you know, if I try really hard. You just have to try, and try again, don't you?
Yeah.
Do you remember the story of Robert the Bruce and the spider, Stu? Robert the Bruce of Scotland was fighting against the English, and he wasn't getting on so well, you know, so he ran away and he hid in a cave. And while he was there, his eye fell on a little spider that was trying to swing from one rocky outcrop to another. And he watched it once, you know, but it didn't quite make it. And he watched it a second time, but still it didn't make it. And then he watched it a third time, and the little spider made the swing between those rocks.
Yeah, Rich. And then Robert the Bruce went back to the battle against the English, didn't he, right? He went back and he remembered the example of the spider. And when he got there, he spun a huge web out of his own bodily fluids in which the English soldiers became trapped, leaving Robert the Bruce free to crawl from one to the next, picking them off with his powerful mandibles. And he won. The story there of Robert the Bruce and the spider.
Fun.
This week, as you may know, is Radio 1's Bodily Awareness Week, which I'm particularly interested in, because I've been trying to make young people more aware of their bodies for some years now. Usually without much success.
Yeah. Human bodies are like quality street chocolates, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes and colours, and everyone is someone's favourite. Although, unfortunately, I always seem to be left with the small, green, unpleasant-tasting ones.
As our contribution to Radio 1 Bodily Awareness Week, and following on from last week's show, where I tried to find out what had happened to people from the old days, I've invited along two people I remember vividly from my childhood and have often wanted to see again. The naked man and naked woman from page 14 of my school Nuffield Foundation biology course textbook. So, will you please welcome the naked man and the naked woman?
Hello, I'm the naked man.
And I'm the naked woman.
You may not have seen a naked man and a naked woman before, but don't be scared.
And remember, there is nothing funny or rude about the naked human body.
So let's take a look, without shame or embarrassment, at some of the things that make a naked man
and a naked woman
different. The first difference you'll spot is our hair. My hair is short and neat, as a man's must always be, so that you can still recognise me as a man if, for any reason, I were to dress up in women's clothes, which I would never do anyway. And it's brown.
A woman's hair, like mine, must be long and blonde, and styled like that of Cheryl Ladd from Charlie's Angels.
The next difference is in our arms. My arms are muscly and covered in hair. I can use them to lift large weights above my head for up to 8 seconds, or punch a man who's been looking at my naked woman in a funny way.
A naked woman's arms are longer than the naked man's and can be used for picking flowers and holding several babies at once. The next difference between a naked man and a naked woman is lower down. Hips. A naked woman's hips are wide so that she can spend the whole of her life from the age of 18 worrying that her bum is too big.
While my naked man's hips are narrow so that I can ride a 10-speed racing bicycle, dance the fandango, wear hipster slacks, and hide in narrow cracks in walls while out foraging for food for my wife and children.
And the last difference between us is here, in the chest area, where Paul Cambridge of Class 3-3 has written tits across my chest. In borrow, as a sort of a witty joke.
Thank you there to the naked man and the naked woman. Nice to see you both still naked after all these years.
Fun.
Body facts. If you were to take out all the organs in someone's body and lay them end to end, it would not be long before you were sent to a high security hospital for the criminally insane. Just as Jeffrey Dahmer, the Milwaukee cannibal, knows only too well.
Fist.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of my life trying to explore the differences between men and women. In fact, last week I was sitting in a largely empty Piccadilly line tube in London on a Sunday night. And this woman who was sitting opposite me leant forward and said to me in a French accent, "Are you gay?" And I said, "No." And she said, "My name's Claudette, I'm an au pair, would you like to go out with me?" So I arranged to meet her the next night at Turnham Green Tube Station, split up with my girlfriend of 3 years by phone that afternoon in anticipation of a long-term exotic Euro romance. Now, I know that seems like a rash thing to do, lads, but when you're asked out on a tube by a teenage French au pair you don't even know, your judgment just goes to the wall, doesn't it, I find. Here are the edited highlights of our subsequent affair.
Je t'aime. Je t'aime. Oui, je t'aime.
Hey, Stuart, wear my underwear. Go on, go on.
No, I won't, no.
Oh, go on.
Look, I'm not wearing a girl's pants, right?
If you loved me, you would wear my underwear.
All right, all right. Hey, I've realised this French woman's underwear feels quite nice against my skin. I realise, yes, I do love you.
One week later.
Now you see, Stuart, you must get down on all fours and pretend to be a little pony for me to ride.
Look, look, I wore your underwear, right, Claudette? I did that. I'm not doing the pony thing.
Oh, Stuart, if you loved me, you would be a pony for me.
All right, okay. Nay. This being a pony isn't so bad, you know. I realise, Claudette, now that, yes, I do love you.
1 week later.
Stuart, I want you to do this for me. Wear my underwear, pretend to be a pony, and lie naked in this pigsty here, licking the dirt from the open mouth of the pig.
Look, Claudette, we're not in France now, right? I'm not doing that, okay?
If you loved me, you would lie in the sty licking the dirt from the pig.
All right. Claudette?
Oui?
Look, I think I've realised something. I don't really love you at all. I've been confusing wearing a woman's underwear, acting like a small horse, and licking the dirt out of animals' mouths with being in love. Although, admittedly, that's an increasingly easy mistake to make these days.
Oh, well.
And that was that, was it, Stu?
Yeah, that was
and
it,
you
yeah.
Split up with your long-term girlfriend for that.
Yeah, but it isn't so bad, right? Because at least it means I'd have to see her mother ever again, right? My ex-girlfriend's mother. I'm not saying she's fat, right? Because making comments about her appearance detract from the fact that she's a horrible, wicked, scheming old bitch.
Stuart, I thought we were on sort of the cutting edge of 90s humour. A line like that isn't so far from the sort of thing Bernard Manning would do, is it? The sort of thing that 1980s comedians like Ben Elton and Rory Bremner strove so hard to eradicate, is it?
Yeah, but what you've forgotten, Rich, is that Bernard Manning dealt with comedy and I deal with truth. And the truth is, my ex-girlfriend's mother is a horrible old bitch. Her name is Helen Wilson, and she is a dental nurse from Greenwich in South London. And that's true. Not very funny, admittedly, but it is true.
This fifth of fun, giving out the real names of people Stuart doesn't like.
That was fun.
Well, our next guest is a regular lifestyle tips giver. I'll try and describe him for you. If you can imagine a sort of the bastard love child of Don Estelle and Windsor Davis from It Ain't Half Hot Mum, with sort of the Welsh voice from Windsor Davis and the rest from Don Estelle, then you'll have a pretty good idea of what he's like. He's a Welsh man from Balham. He's called Peter Bainham. Please welcome him.
Hello, I'm Peter, and I'm back with some more recipes and some lifestyle problem solutions from me and my brother Charlie, who lives 3 miles away, walks to my flat every night, and then sleeps on my jeans in the kitchen. He's too tired to walk back. I've had a lot of letters to the show asking about Charlie, but then most of them have been from Charlie, who gets a bit confused sometimes. Anyway, we've thought up lots of tasty treats this week, such as fizzy curry aid, which is the curry juice left over from a beef curry with a fenzik dropped in it. If you can't afford fenziks, or if Charlie's eaten them all, then just push a straw in the curry and blow in it. Right. Anyway, here's our first recipe, and it's a delicious warming meal for winter nights. What you do is take one OXO cube and eat it. And that's called an OXO cube. Right. Now for this week's lifestyle idea, and this is about having a drink. Obviously, pubs are too expensive and a bit scary. So what we do is we go to the off licence, buy a few cans and drink them in there. It's not as crowded as the pub. And you can lean on the counter by the nuts and sort of have a chat with the man behind the till. I think he likes us, actually, because he keeps going around the back and laughing out loud. Of course, they haven't got any fruit machines or anything in the off-licence, like in a pub. But what you can do is stand facing the wine section and then close your eyes and get Charlie to line up 5 bottles which are exactly the same make. Then open your eyes and they're all the same and Charlie gives you 10 pence. Next. Here's a nice way to start the day. A jar of tartar sauce. My main recipe is called practical pasta. This involves a minimum of fuss and is for people like me who haven't got a pan. Would you like to help me with this one, Richard and Stuart? Yeah? What you need is a packet of pasta, hard pasta like this. Now what you do is you take a piece of hard pasta from the packet.
Yeah.
There you go. And you put it in your mouth.
In my mouth.
Yeah. Then leave it there for about 20 minutes. Until your spit makes it go soft. Then you swallow it.
Okay.
This recipe is much easier with these little pasta twirls that they have, and not spaghetti, which is too long and sort of cuts the back of your throat, as Charlie found out last week. If you can't be bothering waiting for 20 minutes, just crunch the pasta up like an extra strong mint. And that recipe works for coffee, ready breck, and stewing steak, which are all in the meals you can make in your mouth section of mine and Charlie's recipe book idea, One is Quite Lonely. Right, before I go, I'd like to talk about something which I know a lot of people must suffer from, which is what to do if you've been too tired to clean out your mouse's cage and he's covered in little mouse poos. What you do is pretend that the pellets are actually loads of really small sausages and he's really looking forward to eating them later. Thank you.
That was fun.
Good.
It's really good fun.
Fun.
Well, you know, Pete, the thing is, one day you might become a sort of better person. You know, what you've got to do is you've got to keep on trying in this life, haven't you?
You know, that idea of keeping on trying, Rich, always reminds me of the story of Robert the Bruce and the head louse. Don't know if you know it. Robert the Bruce of Scotland was fighting against the English, and he wasn't getting on so well. So he ran away and he hid in a cave. And while he was there, his eye fell on a little head louse. It was trying to leap from one rocky outcrop to another. And he watched it once, but didn't quite make it. Watched it a second time, but didn't quite make it. For it had been raining, and the rock was slippery that day. Then he watched it a third time, and the little head louse made the leap between those rocks. And then Robert the Bruce went back to the battle against the English there, remembered the example of the head louse. And when he got there, he was able to cause a lot of sort of scalp irritation and eczema in the folds of the soldiers' skins.
He wanted some canistan lotion for that, Simon.
And he won. Story of Robert the Bruce and the head louse there.
Fist of fun.
Well, what have you been up to then this week? What have you been doing this week,
Rich? I was wondering what you've been doing myself.
Well,
have you been doing?
I've been doing hobbies, my hobby, actually. Yeah.
What's your hobby?
Well, I do photography. In fact, I've got a photographic memory, except mine is an amateur photographic memory. All of my memories are blurred and out of focus, cut off at the neck. A lot of them are sort of glamour and swimwear stuff. I can't actually remember anything about my life between the ages of 9 and 11 because I left a lens cap on my face.
This week saw the breakup of the relationship of beautiful, charming teenage actress Jenny Seagrove and 87-year-old, unfaithful, underpants-wearing film director Michael Winner. Fist of Fun says, about time too, Jenny.
Fun.
You have to admire Michael Winner, don't you, Stu? Most grown men watch Grange Hill and just dream about getting off with the girls in it. He actually went out and did something about it, which I think's an admirable thing to do.
Yeah, but Michael Winner's being an international film director must have helped him, though, mustn't it?
No, Simone Hyams liked Michael Winner for his personality. You
fun.
Absolutely marvellous fun.
Fist of Fun.
Right, time to come back for our second natural break. Will you please welcome Peter Bainham again?
Right, well, first of all, I've got a brand new lifestyle idea which I've just thought of, which is what to do if Richard and Stuart have just really hurt your arm and you want to cry. Pretend you're just sad because it's cold. In this bit, I want to talk about eating out for when you want to celebrate something special, like Charlie's strange spot on his chest that he thought was cancer has gone away because he pulled it off. Anyway, here are some affordable suggestions about dining in style. Number one, if you've never actually had a meal in a restaurant, what we do is practice by going into a furniture shop and sitting at one of those laid-out tables in the window until they ask you to leave. Number two, many restaurants these days let you take your own wine. Very few, however, let you take your own food. So be discreet. Number three, tipping's important, isn't it? But if you can't afford a money tip, then leave something else, like a little bit of your food. Of course, they might not understand and just think that you've left some of your food. So, if I'm somewhere nice, like McDonald's, when I'm finished, I take a few chips up to the counter and say, there you go. A 10% tip is 4 chips. Number four, in many restaurants, it's very, very bad manners to ask just for something basic, like a piece of salt. But they can only say no. Number five, if you can only afford takeaway prices, you can always sit outside the restaurant by the window with your takeaway, looking inside now and again to sort of get some of the atmosphere. And you could add to the atmosphere by covering you and Charlie with a big coat. And finally, number six, go somewhere where the food smells really nice, like an Indian restaurant, with a big piece of white bread hidden inside your mouth. Then pretend to be looking at the menu, and while you're doing that, chew on the bread, and at the same time, sniff in the smell from other people's meals. Sort of mixing it in with the bread. That's very nice. Bye.
Well, off you go then. Actually, while Pete's away, we can have a look in his bag, see what he's left.
You shouldn't poke around in other people's personal things, Steve. Remember the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears?
Yes, I do remember that story, Rich. But as you remember, I pay no heed to the morals of the stories that contain animals, because animals are different to us, and there's no use in learning anything from them.
Yeah, I forgot about that, sorry.
Regular listeners to the show will know by now. I'll take a well-known fable or fairy story and replace the unreal false animal characters with realistic human ones. And I'll continue to do this until all animal fables are banned and truth reigns.
Or until we run out of fables and fairy stories to do in about 2 weeks' time.
Stuart Lee's True Fables.
This week, Goldilocks and the Three Men. Once upon a time, when the world was young, there lived a pretty little girl called Goldilocks. And three men.
Hello!
Now, one day, Goldilocks was playing in the woods. When, all of a sudden, she came upon a house. Well, you know the story, she went in, ate some porridge, broke a chair, found a bed, slept in that. Some of the things she tried were, you know, not quite right for her. Conveniently, on each occasion, she did find one thing that was just right, yeah, right? You know how it goes, right? But, unbeknownst to Goldilocks, the house belonged to three men, who all lived together in the cottage in the woods, out of sight of other people. But there was nothing funny about them. They were just bachelors who found that renting a house together in a wood saved on rent and basic living expenses. While Goldilocks slept, the three men returned from the woods where they'd been out collecting honey.
You know this honey, right? If we jar it up, we might be able to sell it to some passers-by.
We could set up a stall by the road.
It would help with our living expenses, wouldn't it?
The men settled down to their porridge, which had been waiting on the table for their return. Then the big man said...
Someone's been eating my porridge.
The medium-sized man said...
Yeah, and me, look, someone's been eating my porridge too.
And the little man said...
Someone's been eating my porridge too, and look, they've eaten it all up. Don't worry, lads, I've got some corn pops in the pantry. They're much nicer. Can you reach up and get them for me? It's a bit high for me.
So, the three men settled down to eat their artificially flavoured sugar-coated cereal.
Hey, I'm not being funny, lads, but I reckon someone's been sitting in my chair.
Well, it wasn't me, mate. I was in the woods with you, wasn't I?
Hold on, someone's been sitting in my chair too. Although, how I'm quite so sure, I don't know.
Cool. Someone's been sitting in my chair as well, and they've smashed it all to bits. Look, it's ruined. Look, I wasn't bothered about the porridge, but this is just taking the piss, isn't it? If I get my hands on the bloke who did this, I'll have him, I will. Unless it was one of you two, as you're a bit too big.
All right, the little man. Come on. Calm down. Look. Let's all go and have a lie down, eh? Yeah? In our bedroom that we share, OK?
Simply to keep the heating costs down.
Yes.
The confused three men went upstairs, but could not believe the sight that awaited them.
There's a crimple in my duvet. Someone's been sleeping in my bed.
And mine, look. My bed also bears similar telltale having been slept in signs.
Well, blow me tight. Someone's been sleeping in my bed too. And they're still there. Oh.
And looking into the bed, the three men saw the tousle-haired, angel-faced young girl, her pure small body lying defenceless beneath the silken sheets of the little man's bed, with her blonde locks spilling down over her milk-white shoulders. The three men looked at one another and, as a man, had the same thought. The big man broke the tense silence.
Oh dear, men, this child's obviously got lost in the woods. Can I call the police? Parents will be going spare.
This certainly explains those unusual incidents we've been plagued by today.
What? The chairs and the porridge?
Well, you've been very lucky, Mr. and Mrs. Locks. Young girls could have easily fallen into trouble wandering around in the woods like that. I mean, there are bears around here, you know.
Yeah, we're very grateful, thank you.
That's all right, Mr. Locks. I mean, anyone would have done the same, anybody.
Would you like us to pay for the damaged chair?
Oh, no, accidents will happen. I was clumsy too when I was little.
Mr. Locks, Do you think you'd like some of our honey? We made it ourselves.
Mmm, thank you. It's a very unusual taste, isn't it? Very salty.
Yes. It is honey, though.
Yes, it's honey.
And the moral of that story is that if a small child wanders off in some woods on her own, the chances are someone will find her and then help her. Even in this cynical day and age.
Fist of Fun! The Three Men Special Honey is available from mail order at the address provided at the end of the programme. It is very special.
Fist. Fun.
That was fun.
Fist of Fun. Fist of Fun.
Another show ends, and once again it's time for Stu and I to do what all great comedy acts have done. At the end of their show, snuggle up in a big comedy bed together until next week's show. Come on, everyone, it's bedtime. Come on, John, slide into bed with me. Come on. Yeah, you're probably best known, aren't you, as the drumming squirrel in Pendrell's productions, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, touring production.
No, not at all, no. I'm probably best known for my character Bernard Wright on the politically correct Working Men's Club comic.
Oh, no, that's squirrel in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It was brilliant.
Can I do one of my jokes, perhaps?
There's a black fella, a Pakistani and a Jew in a nightclub. What a fine example of an integrated community.
The squirrel. Yeah,
squirrel's much better than that.
And will you please welcome me to bed with us, Ronnie Ancona? Have you had a good time, Ron?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, quite good. It's quite good. And Pete, how's your arm, mate? All right?
It's hurting worse now. The pain's gone down my side as well.
Right, well, that'll teach you to be funnier than us, won't it?
You know, Richard and Stuart, sometimes I look at the two of you and I think I'll never be as cool as you. Especially you, Stu.
Yeah, we know. But you've got to keep on trying... You've got to keep on trying hard in your life, you know what I mean? You never know...
Trying hard, Rich, eh?
Oh, no.
You know, Rich, maybe it's time for a bedtime story, because that idea of keeping on trying always reminds me of the story of Robert the Bruce and Helen Wilson, who, as you remember, if you're in here at the start, is my ex-girlfriend's mother. I think, Rich, you may be regretting bringing up this Robert the Bruce thing now, aren't you?
I'm beginning to regret it, yeah.
The story of Robert the Bruce and Helen Wilson. I don't know if you know it. Robert the Bruce of Scotland was fighting against the English, and he wasn't getting on so well, so he ran away and he hid in a cave. And while he was there, his eye fell on Helen Wilson, who for some reason was trying to leap from one rocky outcrop to another. And he watched her once, but she didn't quite make it. Watched her a second time, but she didn't make it. She's well into her 50s now, remember? She's quite old. Then he watched her again, and the third time, Helen Wilson, my ex-girlfriend's mother, made the leap between those rocks. And then Robert the Bruce went back to the battle against the English, and he remembered the example of Helen Wilson, my ex-girlfriend's mother. And when he got there, he was able to cause enough guilt, suspicion and mistrust to make the English soldiers largely impotent and incapable of sustaining long-term relationships.
Just gone off the whole idea of sex now, really.
And he won. The story of Robert the Bruce and Helen Wilson there. Good night.
www.fistoffun.net